हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 15, The Lord's Palganda Lila, page 52. Nimai Pandit and his students established a school in the Chandi Mandap in the courtyard of the fortunate Mukunda Sanjaya, the resident of Navadvipa. There Nimai displayed various pastimes, such as establishing his own explanations and refuting others' explanations. While teaching in this way, Nimai would proudly boast about his mastery of learning in the following way. I see that in the Kali Yuga, those who are devoid of any knowledge of Sandhi, or joining words, pass as Bhattacharyas. At present, there is no scholar within Navadvipa who can answer my challenge. End quote. Meanwhile, considering that Nimai had attained marriageable age, Mother Sachi constantly thought about getting him married. One day, by providence, Lakshmi Devi, the personification of the goddess of fortune, and daughter of Balamacharya, who hailed from a pure cultured Brahmin family, met her lord, Gaur Narayan, while taking bath in the Ganges, and offered obeisances to his lotus feet within her mind. By the will of the Lord, that very day, Sri Vanamali, a Brahmin matchmaker resident of Navadvipa, proposed to Mother Sachi the marriage of Nimai with Lakshmi Devi, the daughter of Vallabha. Not getting any special attention or hope of marriage from Mother Sachi, the Brahmin was returning home disappointed when he met Nimai on the way. After understanding everything from the Brahmin, Nimai indicated to his mother his consent for the marriage. The next day, Mother Sachi called that Brahmin and told him to arrange the marriage as soon as possible. The Brahmin happily and immediately went to the house of the bride and informed her family about the consent of the groom's family, upon which Sri Vallabhacharya also jubilantly consented. But he declared that due to poverty, he was not able to give anything more than 5 hari takis as dowry. With the agreement of both the bride and groom's sides, an auspicious day was selected. One day before the marriage, Vallabhacharya came to Nimai's house and in an auspicious moment executed the rituals meant to be performed with one's son-in-law before marriage. Thereafter, other auspicious Vedic and common rituals were duly performed. On the day of the marriage, at the auspicious time of Goduli, or dusk, Nimai Pandit, with his companions, arrived at the house of Vallabha and duly accepted the hand of Lakshmi Devi. The next evening, Nimai returned home with Lakshmi Devi. Mother Sachi, the mother-in-law of Lakshmi, along with other Brahmins' wives, welcomed her daughter-in-law home. From that day on, Mother Sachi observed various opulences and wealth, such as extraordinary effulgences and fragrances, and became overjoyed on understanding that her daughter-in-law was none other than Kamala, or Lakshmi. Due to the presence of Sri Gaur Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and his internal potency, Sri Rama, who is non-different from Sri Lakshmi, the house of Mother Sachi manifests as Vaikuntha, the abode of pure goodness. Yet at that time, by the supreme will of the Lord, no one could understand the covered pastimes of the Lord. Right, so you see that at the yog pit, there's a deity of Gaur Narayan, with Lakshmi Devi and Vishnu Priya. So it's in that mood that he's marrying the girls, right? Because he's in the mood that he will later manifest the Radha and Krishna and all that. So then this kind of pastime he's performing as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? Like different pastimes would be doing different moods. Like his father's leaving, that's like the Ramachandra pastime. And yes? You know, so Swetadweep then means it has all these different aspects in it. Conclusion. A Vaishnava accepts anything favorable for executing his mission. but foolish persons, not knowing the purpose of such exalted Vaishnavas, indulge in criticizing them. Since no one can understand what a Vaishnava does for the purpose of executing his mission, to criticize such a Vaishnava is forbidden. Because you have a principle that you're trying to get across, the principle of becoming Krishna conscious, making others Krishna conscious. So you have to see what is the best way to do that. And so then, like that, some may have a particular way they'll do, and they'll criticize someone else. But you see, is that whatever they're doing, it's not against the scriptures, not against the tradition. Mm-hmm. It just, the principle is being applied in a very specific way. And the results are getting, you're getting the results of pure devotion. So that's how you know it's working. Does that make sense? But because it's different, one shouldn't get upset. Like Srila Prabhupada, his godbrothers and everything, all the temples they have are mutts. Like that. But Srila Prabhupada started with a mutt, but that didn't work out. So then he changed it to the temple, because the temple, then they can have grihasthas and everything. So then some will criticize that, but temples are, a very old tradition. It's not like it's a new thing. Things like that. Chapter 16. The pastimes of the Lord in his childhood and youth. Particularly. The central point of all Vaishnava philosophy is to accept the inconceivable potency of Lord Vishnu. That's what sometimes appears contradictory from a material point of view is understandable in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he can perform contradictory activities by dint of his inconceivable potencies. Right, so since the potencies are non-different from him, then he doesn't have any problem with these different potencies functioning. And even though they seem contradictory, being the source of everything, naturally there's going to be an external, or the not external, but in manifestation of things, there's going to be differences. Right? Like there's a difference between a wall and a pumpkin. Right? But at the same time, they're both coming from Krishna. The potency of both comes from there. Mm-hmm. So for him, there's no contradiction. So how he wants to use things, how he can accomplish things, that's easy for him, because he's the lord of these potencies. For us, not so easy. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 16th chapter, I have indicated the pastimes of the Kaishora age, the age prior to youth. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 327. Interesting. This chapter fully describes Lord Chaitanya's Kaishora Lila, or the activities he performed just before attaining youth. During this time, he studied deeply and was victorious over greatly learned scholars. During his Kaishora Lila, the Lord was sported in the water. He went to East Bengal to secure financial assistance, cultivate knowledge, and introduce the Samkirtan movement. And there he met Tapan Mishra, whom he instructed about spiritual advancement and ordered to go to Varanasi. While Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring East Bengal, his wife, Lakshmi Devi, was bitten by a serpent, or by the serpent of separation, and thus she left this world. When the Lord returned home, he saw that his mother was overwhelmed with grief because of Lakshmi Devi's death. Therefore, at her request, he later married his second wife, Vishnupriya Devi. This chapter also describes the Lord's argument with Keshava Kashmiri, the celebrated scholar, and the Lord's criticism of his prayer glorifying Mother Ganges. In this prayer, the Lord found five kinds of literary ornaments and five kinds of literary faults, thus defeating the pandit. Later on, the Kashmiri pandit, who was known to have been victorious all over the country, submitted himself to the goddess of learning, and by her order, he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the morning of the next day and surrendered unto him. Shloka Anusharanam. Yes.
When he said here that he married Lakshmi Devi and then Vishnupriya,
yes,
it's not in the Kaishora age. It's at when?
No, now is the Kaishora age.
But Kaishora is between 11 and 15. So he married during that time?
Yes.
He was in 24, no?
Sorry? No, 24 is when he left home.
Yes.
Slight difference in the ceremony is slightly different, and that the arrangement's also a little bit different, like that.
One you carry a stick, the other one you have a ball.
Yeah, or one is you carry the stick, the other is your partner carries the stick. You know, so it means it's worked out like that. You know, here you put on fancy clothes for one, the other one you take off and put on not so fancy clothes. And
yes.
Like that. So there is, if you're really astute to it, you can tell the fine differences. Yeah. So 24 is when he took sannyas.
Yes.
So that means he was married to Vishnu Priya from this time.
Yes.
Right? So Lakshmi Priya he would have married, because that was the last pastime of the Pauganda. So it means it would have been just on that verge of...
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah. So because we're also, you always have to remember is that when you're dealing with these things, you're dealing with a Mahapurush, or you're dealing with 1.5 times the age.
Yes.
So even if he was 10... You know, then that would be equal to 15, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so everything, like Krishna, he's what do you call it? 8, but then it was actually be 12, and he left Vrindavan at 11 months. I mean, 11 years, 8 months, and you add that, you'll get 16. Is that yeah. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 111. Lord Chaitanya's Kishor age, age 11 to 15. 116.1. I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose nectarian mercy flows like a great river. Because you have to remember here, at you know, whatever it is, 8 and 10 years old, he's already the top student, can defeat anyone in Navadvip. He's opened his own school. Right? You know, so, you know, we can see we're dealing with a more mature kind of arrangement here.
Can you say that during that time, anyway, child marriage was existing?
Sorry?
Child marriage. That's a concept in India, child marriage, which was then stopped by the British.
No, because in India, there's no concept of child marriage. You're just getting married. We call it child. See, it's like this. It means you're looking at it and think, okay, what about, do children have sex? Do you call that child? No. So then at 11 years old in the Western world, kids are having sex. So are they children? You know what I'm saying? By the time they get to 18, where then technically we would say they're not a child, how many boys has that girl been through? How many has she actually slept with?
Yes.
Literally.
Yes.
So do we call that, is that a child?
Mm-hmm.
A child's a mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, be very careful when you're using these, throwing these terms about. You understand? There's a saying in English, give a dog a bad name and then hang them. Right? So just by starting out with child marriage, then it's already prejudicing the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Since when is it child marriage? You know, it's just like this. Okay, the girl's 12 years old, she's going out with the boy, and her partner says, you know, you're just a child. How is she going to react? What's she going to say? Is she going to say, well, yeah, I'm a little kid? Does that make sense? So you have to look at what's going on in the mentality. So all it is just saying they can't get married, but all they do is deal with sex until finally, and because they don't get married, they just burn out on boy after boy because no one's trained because they're kids, so you don't train them. No one bothers training them, right? And so then by the time they do kind of get to the point where they're freaking out that they got to get married, they're 30. They've already been through, you know, 30, 40, 50 boys. And now they don't trust that it'll ever work. And now how great is the marriage going? So now you have this 70, 75 to 80% divorce rate, you know, in the Western world, because, you know, they wait till they're mature and then they find their own person. We don't have all these arranged marriages and all those kind of things like that. Before arranged marriages, basically it was about, you know, 95 to 100%, you know, it worked. And where they go out and find their own people, it's about 75 to 80% divorce rate. And so, but people aren't smart enough to look at it and go, hey, it's not working. But they'll criticize anybody who it does work. You know what I'm saying? So we're not working on this. We're not marrying our kids at this age. So why would you bring up this child marriage? I mean, Lord Chaitanya is taking care of his mother. He's running his toll. He's maintaining the family. Even at this point, he's 10 years old. He's maintaining the family. What do you call that? Yeah. So, you know, you have the ages, but the point is the mentality that's there. You know what I'm saying? So, kindly don't bring in these socio-political things into Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said, and all this happened before we even started the class. Okay. So, whose nectarian mercy flows like a great river, inundating the entire universe. Just as a river flows downstream, Lord Chaitanya especially extends himself to the fallen. Srila Prabhupada, Narottam Das Thakur is sung, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Karamore. He prays for Lord Chaitanya's mercy because he is the mercy incarnation. Having appeared especially to reclaim the fallen souls, the more fallen one is, the more one's claim to the favor of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One must only be very sincere and serious. Despite being contaminated by all the bad qualities of this Kali Yuga, one surrenders unto the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord will surely and certainly deliver him. The best example is Jagai Madhai. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is like Jagai and Madhai. But the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is still flowing like a great river, inundating the entire world, and thus the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is successfully claiming all fallen souls to free them from contamination. One 16:2-8. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaita Chandra. And all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. Long live Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Kaishor age. Both the goddess of fortune and the goddess of learning worshipped him. The goddess of learning, Saraswati, worshipped him in his victory over the scholar who had conquered all the world. And the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, worship him at home, since he is therefore the husband or lord of both goddesses. I offer my obeisances unto him. At the age of 11, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to teach students. This marks the beginning of his Kaishor age. As soon as the Lord became a teacher, many, many students came to him, every one of them astonished to hear his mode of explanation. The Lord defeated all kinds of scholars and discourses about all the scriptures. Yet, because of his gentle behavior, none of them were unhappy. The Lord, as a teacher, performed various kinds of pranks in his sporting pastimes in the water of the Ganges. After some days, the Lord went to East Bengal, and wherever he went, he introduced the Sankirtan movement. Srila Prabhupada, although Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees in this living succession can defeat all kinds of learned scholars, scientists, and philosophers in arguments, thus establishing the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. The main business as preachers is to introduce Sankirtan everywhere. So it's not about defeating all these philosophers, it's about introducing the Sankirtan movement, because that's positive, that moves forward. The other idea is if by discussing then someone is wrong philosophy the correct understanding is there, then one has to apply that. That's the meaning of Abhideya, how to apply knowledge. Yes. Like Sambandhigyan, because that's what we'd be discussing, then that should be applied as Abhideya. Right? And then in Abhideya, then that starts the process going. So the Sankirtan is the most important. Defeating others in their bogus philosophies, that's just so that the Sankirtan movement can go on. That's not the business of the Vaishnavas. Right? It means it is like of these, Digvijay scholars and that. They go around and that's their job. That's all they do. Mm-hmm. Right? But for the Vaishnavas, no, it's actually the Sankirtan mission.
Now, how can you say that in education, it is very important to defeat deviation, doubt?
Yes, deviations, doubts, anything that can cause a problem to the proper application.
Yes.
Right? Because see, so what happens is that if we're looking at something with the wrong mentality, then we won't be able to apply the devotional process. See, it's because we're supposed to be absorbing ourselves in the Lord and seeing you know, the wonderfulness of His pastime. Here you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal Lord. And so, it means, you could say, He and Lakshmi Devi have been married for a bit more, you know, than, you could say eternity,
yes.
Right? You know, eternity's running, you know, because like in India, how old are you? Oh, I'm 15 running, means, you know, I just turned, but until you end, then you say it's 15 years complete. So I always think, so it's eternity running, like that. And so we should appreciate that this Lord has come and is performing His pastimes. That's why we would avoid then trying to throw the light of the pastimes into a perspective that is, you know, given by the, you know, the Malechas. And of the Malechas, the ones that are the most proud and most arrogant about their position as Malechas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much so that they even get a shout out in the Bhavishya Puran that they're so proud of their language. Like that. You know, and so we avoid that because their only business was to make money. Right? And so, in doing so, then you always make... See, if you have a culture that doesn't want to buy what you have or need what you have to break down the culture.
Yes.
So, because it's about business. So, you break down the culture, you make money off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's what goes on. And so, we shouldn't be supportive of that and try to look at Lord Chaitanya's pastimes through that kind of, mm-hmm. you know, perspective.
Yes.
Because it has zero value for Krishna consciousness. Like that. One should have that faith, one should have that understanding so that one can move forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. Simply to defeat scholars and philosophers is not the occupation of a preacher. Preachers must simultaneously introduce the Sankirtan movement, for that is the mission of the Chaitanya cult. Right? So, in establishing the movement, then there's going to be people who doubt, people who say all kinds of things. And so that must be defeated, because otherwise, if not, then there'll be incorrect practice, incorrect understanding. Like that. So it's not a matter of gyan, it's a matter of what's pure devotion. Like that. 1:16:9-10. Struck with wonder by the influence of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's intellectual prowess, many hundreds of students came to the Lord and began studying under his direction. In East Bengal, there was a Brahmin named Tapan Misra who could not ascertain the objective of life or how to obtain it. Srila Prabhupada. One must first ascertain the object of life and then understand how to attain it. Right? Because you have to know what is the goal and then how you're going to obtain that.
Yes.
Right? Because to know the goal means you have to know who you are, what's going on, what's your business and all that. And so once you see that, okay, here's the philosophy, here's the goal that's there, then how are you going to attain that? How are you going to gain that? That's the Abhideya. That's why then it's mentioned the direct understanding of the scriptures is what's important. Because then you apply. Because Abhida Shakti means the direct meaning, it also means the application of that direct meaning. Right, because the scriptures are telling something that should be accomplished, right? Either directly or indirectly. Either the things that you should be positively doing to move forward, what the goal is, or what things are not useful and how those are removed, right? But the prominence is on remembering Krishna, right? Because if you're remembering, then you're not forgetting. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is pointing out to everyone that the object of life is to understand Krishna, and to attain that goal of life, one must practice Krishna Consciousness, following the methods prescribed by the Goswamis with reference to the authoritative Shastras and Vedas, right? So, we're not imitating, we're following the footsteps, right? So here we see the Lord is having his pastimes, but we're not being told we should be opening, you know, schools at this age or getting married at this age and that. They're giving us what is our piety, what we're, as sadhakas, what we should do. But the Lord, what he does, that's his independent pastimes. We can see already, he's just born, he's already talking. You know, he's already walking around. Anything like that. So you don't have to worry about these things. The Lord will perform his pastimes as he pleases. Right? Because the point is the pastimes are there to please him. Right? So we always have to be very careful to see it through that vision, that vision of affection that the acharyas have. Because if we apply these mundane filters like that, then all we'll get is mundane. We won't get anything spiritual. Because the point is the Lord, being independent, he doesn't have to reveal himself. So if we want to look with these mundane, critical vision, then Krishna will give you good ability in that, faith in that, you'll be situated in that. You know, look at Ramachandra Puri. He could easily find fault in the Lord and everything where there is no fault. Mm-hmm. So where does he get that kind of ability? It's coming from the Lord, because that's what he wants. So if that's what we want, we can get that. If we want pure devotion, that's something else. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very, very careful to use our intelligence to think how to apply these things in Krishna consciousness, how it's going to apply in our life. Not just that something comes up and, oh, that's an issue and that, and then immediately it's something to discuss. Mm-hmm. Like that. No, it's about how we're going to apply in our life. What do we do? So that's why we have to follow what the acharyas say, how they give all this. Because up to now, they've not made any comments about this. You know, shouldn't he be going out and playing? He's only 11 years old, you know, like that kind of stuff. They're not saying that. But they do talk about his various pranks, you know, like that. So that's the whole point. So he can do all these things, but at the same time, being 11, he can still play some pranks. So it has to be with reference to the authoritative Shastras and Vedas. So that you have to look for. So what's the authoritative Shastras and Vedas? You can't just make it up from social, you know, construct. 1:16:11. One becomes a bookworm, reading many books and scriptures and hearing many commentaries and the instructions of many men. This will produce doubt within the heart. One cannot in this way ascertain the real goal of life. Right? Okay, this is where it's from. Mm-hmm. That's one of the verses on our list for memorizing. Just to let you know.
For which type of students?
Yes, that's the question. Which students and all that? In Srimad Bhagavatam 7:13:8, it is said, Grantan naiva bhyased bahun na vyakyam upayun jita. One should not read many books, nor should one try to make a profession of reciting many books, especially if one is a devotee. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't read many books. It means we read, you know, we're reading Bhagavatam. That's our book. Gita is the preliminary, giving the philosophy of that. Chaitanya Charitamrita is showing how someone who reads Bhagavatam lives their lifestyle. You know, what's the values, how they deal. Then the acharyas are giving commentaries on, these aspects of the Bhagavatam and anything connected with it on how we'll apply it in our life. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what we read. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's not too many books. But if it's more than what you can do, you don't just read books just to read. Like that.
Since the beginning of this course, it's quite
but this is not too many books. The Library of Congress, that's too many books. Hmm? Yeah. So the point is that you're reading because you're going through and studying. Yes. So you're going through how many you can study. Mm-hmm. But just to read, then as it says, you'll just get doubt. Because this book will say this, that book will say that. As we saw in Nectar Devotion, that is being pointed out by Jiva Goswami that Rupa Goswami is using so many synonyms. Mm-hmm. And they themselves, in describing, are using synonyms. And Prabhupada is using synonyms. And so then we'll come up with a doubt, but you know, one's saying this, one's saying that, because we have our idea of what the word means. Mm-hmm. Rather than we're learning from them what the word means. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like we're saying, you know, fainting or devastation. Mm-hmm. That also probably uses confused. Mm-hmm. But you say, no, but they're not fainting. But in the example, he's giving where they faint, but also just where they're so confused, they're not even interacting with the outside world. Mm-hmm. So that means the mind and the senses aren't functioning. Mm-hmm. Even though they may be still standing there, like the gopis when Krishna left with Akrura. Then that was their condition. They didn't fall on the ground. But also falling on the ground is very standard. Mm-hmm. So one has to understand the breadth of what's being indicated here. Otherwise, then we'll say, oh no, it just means this. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, the point is everything stops functioning. And so then you get that devastation. So that may be fainting, that may just be non-interaction with the outside world. You know, stun, you know, all these different things are there. So it's just the difference on, because you see in paralysis, the mind is still functioning. But in devastation, the mind's not. Mm-hmm. So they're experiencing that paralysis but they're still standing, but the mind's not working. Mm-hmm. So it's devastation. So, like that, we have to be able to appreciate the range, so we learn from the acharyas how the words are used. Does that make sense? Rather than impose our ideas and our definitions upon it. That's why we may, from hearing something here, we may have an understanding, but then as we go further, they give further understandings, we have to expand that. We can't be attached to this and say, oh, but this and that contradict each other. But the point is, where does contradiction come in when it's dealing with the Lord? That's the whole point of the Lord is the Lord of multifarious energies. Mm-hmm. Is that all these contradictory energies have no problem functioning harmoniously together with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why we always have to be able to expand our vocabulary, because otherwise if we get stuck in that it has to mean this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then we won't understand the Lord's pastimes, because then the authority is not the acharyas. The authority is whatever, you know, Moni or Williams or, you know, whatever it is that we're using as an authority. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, okay. You're moving the blanket because he's already so tall. If he sits on that, then
bump my head.
Yeah, you'll be so much up in the smoke you won't be able to breathe. So he's trying to slow it down a little.
I'm
bit.
I'm already
so, yeah,
crying.
Yeah.
So Maharaj, with this type of study, we are supposed to broaden our understanding.
Yes, the idea is to broaden the understanding, deepen the understanding, because as you see, as it goes, then. There's more and more of an understanding, the depth of it, and how pure devotion is there. So if one has that understanding of pure devotion, includes everything else, so there's no need of anything else. Mm-hmm. And that understanding of pure devotion comes from, you know, from the acharyas, from the scriptures. Mm-hmm. That then means we're fixed in devotional service. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be that's the main point that's there. Mm-hmm. That's the focus. Not that we can't deal with all these other things, but it's at this point we don't. You miss the point of what what the Chaitanya Charitamrita is offering. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, the taste that devotees have in performing their devotional service. Mm-hmm. The other ones, you know, that they have that love for Krishna, that attraction, that attachment, all the qualities that we can observe from the outside. Mm-hmm. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is giving us a glimpse into the moods and the exchanges and that affection and all that's there. So that should be what's appreciated. But we can see it's based on the science of Krishna consciousness. So it's something applied. So it's not artificial. So then you won't end up with the sahajya kind of stuff either. Like that, because it's a science. You know? Science means shastra being applied. That's science. We're just going with our sentiments. Yes. And there's no shastric backing it up, in actuality, then it's not of use. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, these are the scriptures given by Srila Prabhupada, so this is not too much. You know, he's mentioned, you know, the Gita, Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita as the foundation for the course.
Yes.
Right? And then he's talked about these other literatures that are, you know, Nectar of Devotion is there, Upadeshamrita, Ushupanishad. Then we see from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works, he's mentioned Jiva Dharma and Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So they have their place. Then he mentions, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Lagu Bhagavatamrita. So he mentions that, you know, someone who wants to understand about devotees, devotional service, and that's from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Then we see he talks about, you know, sitting on the Vyasasana, you should know the six schools, you know, so that comes into the Darshan. Then he always talks about the Sandarbhas, like that.
The Vedanta Sutra, where he mentions the Vedanta Sutra.
They're constantly quoting it.
She doesn't like it.
You sure?
Oh, I see, okay. The wrong platform, yes. But the point is, like it or not, it's just like medicine. We may or may not like it. But now from that study, we are able to catch these finer points that are being made that before we wouldn't see. Yeah. It's just that the medicine means, you know, you figure out how to get some sugar into it or something, you know, it's like that, make it a little sweeter and all that. Yes. One must give up the ambition to be a learned scholar, right? Because it's not about becoming a scholar and this and that, it's about becoming a devotee. And so, therefore, we're studying the scriptures, the works of the acharyas and that, to understand devotional service so we can practice it. So it's not about having knowledge, it's not that the knowledge will make you a better preacher. It's being more devoted, more having more faith will give you like that. And that is gained by association. So then by practical service with devotees, by studying the scriptures that the acharyas are giving, then trying to apply that in their life in the association of devotees, that's how we'll move forward. That will make one a stronger preacher. You know, so for some saying, no, unless you know all this, you can't preach, then that's wrong. And to say, oh, we don't have to study anything, you just have to do something practical. But the point is you're doing something practical. The practical must be based on some knowledge. You know, just because you're running around doesn't mean that something's being accomplished. You know what I'm saying?
Well, why wouldn't you study? Could we also ask like that? If you're making a point, you don't have to look for it.
Why not?
The problem. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's the problem? Why have all the books?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Because if it was just a matter of doing work, then you'd save a lot of time not having to do all these books.
And it's easier to sell incense than books.
Yeah, yeah.
So if it's just about money, then...
Yeah, yeah, that's really...
Tomas, can you say that a devotee is automatically a scholar?
Yes. Because if you know Krishna, you know everything.
Yes, even if he's not able to express all the details.
No, but the point is what he understands, that's what he expresses. You explain what you understand. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're practicing Krishna consciousness, means you're convinced. So what convinces you, that's what you explain to others, but in a language they can understand. Mm-hmm. Like that. One must give up the ambition to be a learned scholar and in this way earn a worldly reputation and financial facilities. If one diverts his attention to studying many books, he cannot fix his mind in devotional service, nor can he understand many scriptures, for they are full of grave statements and meanings, right? So the depth of it's there. So if you do a volume, you can't understand. That's why we're going through. And you can see is by going through what we've gone through before, now when we get to here, it goes much, much quicker. Right? I mean, there's 18 volumes of Bhagavatam, right? So basically you're studying 9 in 3 years, right? But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're going through 11 in the same amount of time, if not quicker. You know what I'm saying? Because we understand so much already. You know, it's like in the Gita, we spent two-thirds of the year studying the first one-third of the book.
Yes.
And then the last two-thirds of the book went through in one-third of the time.
Yes.
So that's where we're saying we're studying like that. We're not just reading. Because
yes.
Reading, then that's where we get confused. And also to do it as a financial aspect, and then claim, try to get the claim on the devotional side also. Means you want to be a scholar and by that way make your money, but that's how you make your money. Don't claim that that has something to do with devotional service. You know, any more than the guy working down at the office job at the desk is devotional service. Just because it may be scholarly doesn't make it any more devotional. Yes?
Also, we see, except for Bhagavatam, most of the scriptures describe the Supreme Lord indirectly.
Yes.
So, in order to catch it, requires also the mercy of Lord. Otherwise, by reading more, we become more confused.
Yes. Yeah, because we see is that the Acharyas, they've gone through all the works. That's the point. We don't have to read all 18 Puranas. We just have to read Bhagavatam. Right? And then in doing that, then it's we get the benefit. Then from that view of Bhagavatam, now when we look at anything else from the Puranas, we'll have an understanding. Right? Just like after reading the first canto of Bhagavatam, then you can actually understand Mahabharata. But otherwise, if you just read Mahabharata without understanding that, you won't actually gain any more understanding. Right? So that's the whole thing. That's why it said is he completed, you know, or perfected the Mahabharata by the Bhagavatam. He explained the Gayatri by the Bhagavatam. You know, the Gayatri is the basis of the Veda. And so by understanding the Gayatri, you understand the Veda. So then, you know, all these things have been explained. That's the perfection of the Bhagavatam. Like that. And if somebody has that scholarly ability and he can develop that and use that nicely in his you know, teaching and preaching and all that, then that's great. But to think that that's what's going to make you a preacher, no. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives his opinion that those who are attracted to studying many books of literature concerning various subject matters, especially fruitive activities and philosophical speculation, are deprived of unalloyed devotional service because of their splayed attention. Right? Because then you have too many things, and, oh, but what is this, and what about that, and, you know, so then you can't know devotion, because that's surrendered to Krishna, and then he reveals. Right? Man has a general tendency towards fruitive activities, religious ritualistic ceremonies, and philosophical speculation. A living entity, thus bewildered since time immemorial, does not understand the real goal of life, and thus his activities in life are wasted. Right? So we've done all these things before. We've been the big scholars, we've been this and that, we've been Brihaspati, we've been Brahma. Right? We started off as Brahma, right? You know, so he knows a lot. You know, he's a good scholar. He's, you know, well situated socially. You know, he's quite respected. You know, like that. So, and still we're here. So, yeah, that's the point. Right? Innocent persons misled in this way are deprived of unalloyed Krishna bhakti, devotional service to the Lord. Tapan Mishra is a vivid example of such a person. He was a learned scholar, but he could not ascertain what the goal of life is. Therefore, he was given a chance to hear Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructing Sanatana Goswami. Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Tapan Mishra is especially significant for persons who loiter here and there collecting books and reading none of them, thus becoming bewildered regarding the aim of life. Get that. Yeah. Once, yeah, probably gave the example of, you know, you collect all these books and drag all these books around. He says, like a donkey, you know, just carrying them. You're getting no. You take a trunk of books, put it on the back of the donkey, it carries it around all day. But it doesn't learn anything. You know, it's not that it becomes a scholar or something. Tapan Mishra, being thus bewildered, was directed by a Brahmana in a dream to go to Nimai Pandit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Quote, because he is the Lord, Ishwara. End quote. The Brahmana told him, undoubtedly he can give you proper direction. End quote. After seeing the dream, Tapan Mishra came to the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, and he described all the details of the dream to the Lord. The Lord, being satisfied, instructed him about the object of life and the process for attaining it. He instructed him that the basic principle of success is to chant the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Srila Prabhupada. The Krishna consciousness movement is based upon this instruction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that one must chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra regularly and according to the prescribed principles. We simply ask our Western students to chant at least 16 rounds a day, but sometimes we find that they fail to chant even these 16 rounds. And instead, they bring many austere books and a worshipping method that diverts their attention in so many ways. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult is based upon the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Lord Chaitanya first advised Tapan Misra to fix his mind on this chanting. We, the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, must strictly follow this advice of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right, so all the things that the acharyas are recommending, Prabhupada is giving, but he's also giving it in such a way that it doesn't impede the chanting. Like he said, is that Prabhupada's given the worship. He's given, you know, to technical worship, the Shaligram worship, the 16 items, and all these things. And he said, but he expected that the puja itself would take 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But we'll have a tendency to increase it and pay hours and hours and hours and mm-hmm. like that. That's fine if you're also chanting so much and doing so many other things. So, you know, just everything's increased. But if this is the only thing, you're just technically doing this, and then the other aspects aren't going so well, then it's not balanced. It's not that important. You know, of course, you can say they're engaged in service, and so that's good, but you can say, and so like that, they'll keep themselves, you know, moving forward spiritually, but it's still not the ideal position.
Mm-hmm.
The holy name has to be the main aspect. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Or, you know, it's like, or, yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So we complicate things.
Yes.
You know? Like that. You know, so it's like you can do things in a very straightforward way. Prabhupada gave a very, you know, straightforward system of cooking. And then from that, you can expand it more. But that basic, it works, and it always works, and it's very nice. You know, but then we'll complicate it. So the point is, there's a difference between development and sophistication and complication. Like that. So we have to be able to see that difference. So, yeah.
Can you say, I have seen that in the Vedas, it's very often about going quick. For example, to read Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna and Arjuna were discussing, it was always very quick, 45 minutes, 1 hour. So is it a principle to try to follow the same time?
One, you'd have to be able to deal just in the Sanskrit and understand the Sanskrit and then just read the Sanskrit through.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like that. But that's not a matter of that. See, it's because it's also, things must be done well. See, mode of goodness is something done quickly and properly. Yes. Mode of passion is quickly and not properly.
Yes.
And ignorance is slowly and not properly.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So, if we have that level of qualification that we can just read through the, you know, the Devanagari and just go through the whole thing just straight like that, and we get more and more understanding, then that's great. But at the same time, as the comments of the acharyas are always of value,
yes.
You know, the depth that's there, the farther you're going into these things, then you won't, you know,
yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? So. It's a matter of going through and doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one wants to be as quick and efficient as possible, but it must mean it's being done properly. So the science must be being
yes.
applied.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that creates the balance.
Yes. Yes.
You know, if one's in the mode of ignorance, then, you know, the temple commander definitely has to speed you up. You know, because, you know, you're going slow and not doing a great job. You know, of course, there's always the question that comes up, what if you do it slowly and really good? Yeah, then you have to work on the speed. Like that. Because otherwise, then you get too trippy. I remember once as a kid, you had, you know, the bread pan that you bake bread in? You know, they're not that big. I remember washing one once for 45 minutes. Because you get into it, and then you get into it, and it gets small. And so you're starting to see, I don't know, like on the atomic level, that there's something stuck between this molecule and that molecule. Like that. Yeah. No, there's a problem there.
perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, yeah.
I had one brahmachari cutting the potato for 45 minutes. One.
That must have been really was it perfectly cut?
No.
Yes. So that's the mode of ignorance. So.
He said that this was his first time in the kitchen and last for me for sure.
Okay.
Maybe yes. That was his objective.
Oh yeah, that's also.
No, he was very.
But it speeds up. I remember the first time I cooked khichdi for three people. It took me 3 hours. And that was with the Swami coming in constantly and harassing. Then it was 3 hours. Probably otherwise it would have been five. But. So, yeah. So it sped up with time. You know, with that, with sincere encouragement from the Maharaj, then it gradually sped up. Okay. Yeah, so one has to try to see that things move forward nicely. Mm-hmm. Like that. So you're trying to get that balance. That it's quick because, see, is the idea of the quick is not, it's not about the speed. It means that if you're focused, you can do things quicker because you're more aware and that you make the proper decision. Mm-hmm. So you have the proper knowledge and you're trying to do it to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. And so therefore you try to make it be as efficient as possible.
Yes.
So it's just natural, but that comes by purification.
Yes.
Like that. Yes.
We sometimes hear we should chant as fast as possible without rushing. Is that the same principle?
Yeah, means because if it's too slow, then you space out. And if it's too quick, then you're not. Then also, yeah. Yeah. So you have to try to get that balance. So Prabhupada recommended 5-minute rounds because that's not too slow, too quick.
That's only when you are fully attentive.
I asked.
I said, don't ask a question you don't want to
know.
No,
exactly.
So you mean 20 minutes? I need to work on the 20 minutes.
Sincere encouragement from the Swami.
Yes. But yeah, Prabhupada recommended that, otherwise, one tends to space out. Mm. Like that. Also, you find if you roll the R's, it goes quicker.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've got that one. Yeah,
yeah. Because yeah, otherwise, using the Hare Krishna, Hare, it's a little slow.
Long bend you have to get around.
Yeah, yeah. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult is based on the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Lord Chaitanya first advised Tapan Mishra to fix his mind on this chanting. We, the members of the Krishna conscious movement, must strictly follow the advice of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we see is that's why the chanting is there first, people at that. Deity worship is introduced later. It means you're taking part as a program, part of the sadhana, but being involved in it, then actually you need to be more fixed in chanting and all that. Because that's the idea, is that someone who's fixed in the devotional process will be able to engage in the deity worship to advantage. Otherwise, then just by attending the programs and watching and all that, then you get that full advantage. But to be able to get that personal involvement with it, you know, technically, then one needs to be more mature in chanting the holy name to take advantage. 1:16, 16-18. Not that it's higher, it's just technical, that's all. Tapan Mishra desired to live with the Lord in Navadvip, but the Lord asked him to go to Varanasi, Banaras. The Lord assured Tapan Mishra that they would meet again in Varanasi. Receiving this order, Tapan Mishra went there. I cannot understand the inconceivable pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for although Tapan Mishra wanted to live with him in Navadvip, the Lord advised him to go to Varanasi. Srila Prabhupada. When Tapan Mishra met him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in household and life, and there was no indication that in the future he would accept the sannyas order. But by asking Tapan Mishra to go to Varanasi, he indicated that in the future he would accept sannyas, and that when he would teach Sanatana Goswami, Tapan Mishra would take advantage of the opportunity to learn the object of life and the real process for attaining it. Like, just when he's talking with Sanatana Goswami, it doesn't mean that others aren't there by this indication. You know, it's just like Suta Goswami is speaking to Shonaka Rishi. And then all the sages that are there, they're hearing. Right? Or Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikit Maharaj.
Yes.
Or Krishna speaking to Arjuna. It doesn't mean that the whole battlefield didn't hear it. Like that. You know. So, yeah.
So here it was Tapa Mishra, Chandrasekhara Vaidya, and the Brahmana. Where is it from? The Brahmana from Chavala. It says which region he's from, but some Brahmana, that's the one who encouraged him to go talk to the sannyasis.
Oh, okay. And so they all heard.
Yeah, those three.
Okay.
The one who arranged the meeting with the professional Sarasvati?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's he from? It says where he's from, but I can't remember. Okay.
Somewhere in the hood. Maybe. Just trying to figure out where the hood is.
Okay.
Yeah. 1:16:19-21. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu contributed the greatest benefit to the people of East Bengal by initiating them into Harinama, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, Maha Mantra, and making them learned scholars by educating them. Right? So you're educated in the process of chanting and the position of Krishna, the living entity, and that's knowledge. Right? Just knowing the grammar and the speculation, that's not the main thing. Right? Mm-hmm. So you see, it's when the acharyas, they use the grammar, they use it all in the context of establishing Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. That's the proper use of it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like the Digvijay Pandit, he just uses it for, you know, like defeating people and feeling good about himself. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Lord was engaged in various ways in preaching work in East Bengal, his wife, Lakshmi Devi, was very unhappy at home in separation from her husband. The snake of separation bit Lakshmi Devi, and its poison caused her death. Thus she passed to the next world. She went back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 8:6, Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Chajan Yante Kalevaram. One's practice in thinking throughout his entire life determines the quality of his thoughts at death. And thus at death one obtains a suitable body. According to this principle, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune from Vaikuntha, who was absorbed in thought of the Lord in separation from him, certainly went back home to Vaikuntha after death. 1:16:22-23. Lord Chaitanya knew about the disappearance of Lakshmi Devi because he is the Supersoul himself. Thus he returned home to solace his mother, Sachi Devi, who was greatly unhappy about the death of her daughter-in-law. When the Lord returned home, bringing with him great wealth and many followers, he spoke to Sachi Devi about transcendental knowledge to relieve her of the grief she was suffering. Srila Prabhupada. A soul comes into this material world and creates bodily relationships with a father, a mother, sisters, brothers, a wife, and children. But all these relationships pertain to the body, not the soul. Therefore, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, dhiras tattara namuhyati, one who is sober is not disturbed by such phenomenal changes within this material world. Such instructions are called tattvakata, or real truth. 1:16:24-25. After coming back from East Bengal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began educating others. By the strength of his education, he conquered everyone, and thus he was greatly proud. Lord Chaitanya married Vishnupriya, the goddess of fortune, and thereafter he conquered a champion of learning named Keshava Kashmiri. Srila Prabhupada. As in the modern day there are many champions in sports, so in bygone days there were many learned scholars in India who were champions in learning. One such person was Keshava Kashmiri, who came from the state of Kashmir. He traveled all over India and at last came to Navadvip to challenge the learned scholars there. Unfortunately, he could not conquer the learned scholars in Navadvip, for he was defeated by the boy scholar Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later, he understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he surrendered unto him and later became a pure Vaishnav in the Sampradaya of Nimbarka. He wrote Kaustubha Prabha, a commentary on the Vedanta commentary of the Nimbarka Sampradaya, which is known as the Parijata Bhashya. The Bhakti Ratnakar mentions Keshava Kashmiri and lists his predecessors in the specific succession of the Nimbarka Sampradaya. 1. Srinivasacharya. 2. Vishva Acharya. 3. Purushottama. 4. Vilas. 5. Sarup. 6. Madhava. 7. Balabhadra. 8. Padma. 9. Shama. 10. Gopala. 11. Kripa. 12. Deva Acharya. 13. Sundara Bhatta. 14. Padmanabha. 15. Upendra. 16. Ramachandra. 17. Vamana. 18. Krishna. 19. Padmakara. 20. Shravana. 21. Bhudi. 22. Madhava. 23. Shyama. 24. Gopala. 25. Balabhadra. 26. Gopinath. 27. Keshava. 28. Gokula. And 29. Keshava Kashmiri. It is stated in the Bhakti Ratnakar that Keshava Kashmiri was a favorite devotee of Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning. By her grace, he was an extremely influential scholar, and he was the greatest champion among all the scholars in the four corners of the country. Therefore, he got the title Digvijaya, which means one who has conquered everyone in all directions. He belonged to a very respectable Brahmin family of Kashmir. Later, by the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave out the profession of winning championships and became a great devotee. He joined the Nimbarka Sampradaya, one of the Vaishnava communities of the Vedic culture. Right, so he's in that line, like that. And so now he's become serious, then taking Lord Chaitanya's instructions about pure devotional service, then he follows very nicely in the line. 1:16:26-31. Vrindavan Das Thakur has previously elaborately described this. That which is clear need not be scrutinized for good qualities and faults. Offering my obeisances to Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, I shall try to describe that portion of the Lord's analysis, which, when he heard it, made the Digvijaya feel himself condemned. Once on a full moon night, the Lord was sitting on the bank of the Ganges with his many disciples and discussing literary topics. Consequently, Keshava Kashmiri Pandit came there. While offering his prayers to Mother Ganges, he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord received him with adoration. But because Keshava Kashmiri was very proud, he talked to the Lord very inconsiderately. Quote, "I understand that you are a teacher of grammar," he said, "and that your name is Nimai Pandit. People speak very highly of your teachings. Teaching of beginner's grammar." Right? They always have to, this is just the standard. Anytime you're dealing with these kind of things, they always have to throw that in. Srila Prabhupada. Formerly, Sanskrit schools first taught grammar very thoroughly, and this system continues even now. A student was supposed to study grammar carefully for 12 years in the beginning of his life, because if one is expert in the grammar of the Sanskrit language, all the shastras are open to him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is famous for teaching grammar to students, and therefore Keshava Kashmiri first referred to his position as a teacher of grammar. Keshava Kashmiri was very proud of his literary career. He was far above the first lessons of grammar, and so he thought the position of Nimai Pandit not at all comparable to his own, right? So the first beginning is you go into the technical, but it's how you apply it. It's not that there's more grammar. It's not that as he advances, he's used... means Panini gives us 3,000 sutras. That's all there is. There isn't more grammar than that. You know? So then the difficulty comes up is that it's the depth of your understanding of it, how you can apply it. So then Lord Chaitanya is describing on the level of Krishna consciousness, so you're not going to get deeper than that. And so he thought the position of Nimai Pandit not at all comparable to his own. 1:16:32. Keshava Kashmiri continued, "I understand that you teach Kalapa Vyakarana. I have heard that your students are very expert in word jugglery of this grammar." Srila Prabhupada, There are many schools of grammar in the Sanskrit language, the most famous of which are the systems of Panini and the Kalapa and Kaumudi grammars. There were different branches of grammatical knowledge, and a student of grammar was supposed to study them all in 12 years. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is famous as Nimai Pandit, taught grammar to his students, who became expert in dealing with the word jugglery of complicated grammar. Almost anyone expert in studying grammar interprets the Shastras in many ways by changing the root meanings of their words. A student of grammar can sometimes completely change the meaning of a sentence by juggling grammatical rules. Keshava Kashmiri indirectly taunted Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by implying that although he was a great teacher of grammar, such grammatical juggling of root meanings did not require great expertise. This was a challenge to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because it was prearranged that Keshava Kashmiri would have to discuss the Shastras with Nimai Pandit, from the very beginning he wanted to bluff the Lord. Thus the Lord replied as follows. Right, so they're proud of just their technical ability, not about the understanding or anything else like that. So that's the difficulty, because you can see here is he's not humble. So the Bhagavad Gita is pointing out that the symptom of knowledge is humility. Right? In the list of the 20 points of this is knowledge, Krishna says, then humility is the symptom. So he's proud, that means he's actually not that knowledgeable. He may have mechanical knowledge, but that means he doesn't actually know what to do. He doesn't know the science. Like that. Otherwise, then an application of the science, that's where you become humble. Yes?
Maharaj,
Navadvipa Atmiya
says, Brihaspati came as
Keshava Kashmiri. Ah, okay. So that means he's not bad. Definitely not bad. But, you know, compared to the Lord, it means Brihaspati can't go up to, you know, the Lord and then make comments like that. You know, so, yeah. But, you know, it's part of the pastime, so that you see. 1.16.33, the Lord says, yes, I am known as a teacher of grammar, but factually I cannot impress my students with grammatical knowledge, nor can they understand me very well. Right? So you say these things, and that, and then you see that they'll take, you know, sometimes if they're more cultured, then that will bring them to behave nicely, like you saw with the sannyasis at Varanasi. But so for others, they just become more proud. So let's see. Srila Prabhupada. Since Keshava Kashmiri was a little puffed up, the Lord increased his artificial pride by presenting himself as subordinate to him. Thus he flattered him as follows. Lord Chaitanya continued, my dear sir, whereas you are a very learned scholar in all sorts of scriptures, and are very much experienced in composing poetry, I am only a boy, a new student, and nothing more. Therefore I desire to hear your skill in composing poetry. We could hear this if you would mercifully describe the glory of Mother Ganges. End quote. When the Brahmana Keshava Kashmiri heard this, he became still more puffed up, and within 1 hour he composed 100 verses describing Mother Ganges. The Lord praised him, saying, sir, there is no greater poet than you in the entire world. Your poetry is so difficult that no one can understand it but you and Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, right? So it's indirectly also, yeah. Srila Prabhupada. Replying to Keshava Kashmiri sarcastically, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indirectly minimized the value of his poetry by saying, yes, your compositions are so nice that no one but you and your worshipful mother, the goddess of learning, can understand them. End quote. Keshava Kashmiri was a favorite devotee of Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the master of the goddess of learning, has the right to speak sarcastically of her devotees. Right? So he can. She's not complaining. In other words, although Keshava Kashmiri was proud of being favored by the goddess of learning, he did not know that she is controlled by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada. Oh no. Lord Chaitanya, 1.16.39-44. Lord Chaitanya continued, but if you explain the meaning of one verse, we can all hear it from your own mouth and thus be very happy, right? In other words, there's 100 verses. None of them can be understood. So if you'll explain one of them, then hearing it from you, then we will appreciate it. Right? But it sounds as though, you know, because they're new in this, you know, they're not so developed, they don't understand his technical grammar. The Digvijaya Keshava Kashmiri inquired which verse he wanted explained, right? Because then that's also the thing, is then he's showing, you know, that he said all these, you know, like that. And then, so if they caught one, then he would be impressed. But otherwise, if not, then he would have to pick it out. And that way you use it as, oh, you don't even know. Okay, so then I'll pick one for you. You know, it's just like that. The Lord then recited one of the 100 verses Keshava Kashmiri had composed. The greatness of Mother Ganges always brilliantly exists. She is the most fortunate because she emanated from the lotus feet of Sri Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. She is the second goddess of fortune, and therefore she is always worshipped by both demigods and by humanity. Endowed with all wonderful qualities, she flourishes on the head of Lord Shiva. Footnote 5. If this was the average meter Keshava Kashmiri used, he composed and chanted this verse in 36 seconds, along with 99 others at the same rate. So that's how you get 100 verses in an hour. That, you know, it means it's like, so that means 36, that means 9 seconds a line. Right, because there's four, will be four lines. So it means he's just, in other words, he's just reciting them like this, making them up extempo, just on
freestyling.
Yes. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him to explain the meaning of this verse, the champion, very much astonished, inquired from him as follows. I recited all the verses like the blowing wind. How can you completely learn by heart even one among the verses? That's why he said before, so which one do you want me to, you know, so that, because he knew they won't catch, and then Lord Chaitanya catches, so already he should be, I say,
starting to get nervous.
Yes, starting to get nervous, yes. How could you completely learn by heart even one amongst those verses? The Lord replied, by the grace of the Lord, someone may become a great poet, and similarly by his grace, someone else may become a great Shrutidhara, who can memorize anything immediately. Srila Prabhupada. In this connection, Shrutidhara is a very important word. Shruti means hearing, and Dhara means one who can capture. Formerly, before the beginning of Kali Yuga, almost everyone, especially among the intelligent men, the Brahmanas, was a Shrutidhara. As soon as a student heard any of the Vedic wisdom from his master, he would remember it forever. There was no need to refer to books, and therefore there were no written books in those days. The spiritual master delivered the Vedic hymns and their explanations to the student, who would then remember them forever without consulting books. Right? So they would learn it, and then they could refer to it, and it was work. And everybody's heard all these things, so they had that common ground, and that. To become a Shrutidhara, one who can remember simply by hearing, is a great achievement for a student. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, the Lord says, know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. As soon as we find anything extraordinary, we should understand that such an extraordinary manifestation is the special grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to the champion, Keshava Kashmiri, that just as he was greatly proud of being a favorite devotee of Mother Saraswati, so someone else, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, being favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could become a Shrutidhara and thus memorize anything immediately simply by hearing it. Right? So anything that's special is by the grace of the Lord. And so that's why then all these things coming from the Lord, then we should see things connected to the Lord. We should see it in that context. Right? Otherwise, like Keshava Kashmir, you think that you're special. But it's the Lord's grace that makes us special. Mm-hmm. 1:16:45. Satisfied by the statement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Brahmana, Keshava Kashmiri, explained the quoted verse. Then the Lord said, He said, you please explain it. So he explained everything and, you know, probably told all the rules and everything like this and that. Then the Lord said, now kindly explain the special qualities and faults in the verse. Right? You know, so you heard what it is. So what are the special qualities and the faults? Srila Prabhupada. Not only did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pick out this one among the 100 verses and remember it, although the Brahman had recited them like the blowing wind, but he also analyzed his qualities and faults. Not only did he hear the verse, but he immediately made a critical study of it. So he heard it. So he's hearing them all as he's going and analyzing it as it's going. So then he picked that particular one. The Brahmana replied, "There is not a tinge of fault in that verse. Rather, it has the good qualities of similes and alliteration." Srila Prabhupada. In the last line of the verse quoted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the letter Bha is repeated many times, as in the words Bhavani, Bhartur, Vibhavati, and Abhuta. Such repetition is called Anuprasha, or alliteration. The words Lakshmi or Eva and Vishnu's Charna Kamalot Pati are instances of Upama Alankara, for they exhibit metaphorical beauty. The Ganges is water, and Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. Since water and a person are not actually similar, the comparison is metaphorical.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's using all these. So he's saying, these are the ornaments, there's no faults.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord said, "My dear sir, I may say something if you will not become angry. Can you explain the faults in this verse? There's no doubt that your poetry is full of ingenuity, and certainly it has satisfied the Supreme Lord. Yet, if we scrutinize and consider it, we can find both good qualities and faults." The Lord concluded, Now, therefore, let us carefully scrutinize this verse. The poet replied, "Yes, the verse you have recited is perfectly correct. You are an ordinary student of grammar. What do you know about literary embellishments? You cannot review this poetry because you do not know anything about it." Srila Prabhupada. Keshava Kashmiri first wanted to bluff Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that saying since he was not an advanced student in literary style, he could not review a verse full of metaphors and literary ornaments, right? Because that's the thing, he's going back on his position and the other's position. So he's using ad hominem as the medium here to try to establish. He's not actually going on the merits of the verse.
Yes.
And his grammatical application.
Yes.
He's just pointing out that I'm superior to you, therefore I've won.
That's the Vitanda and Nyaya, isn't it?
That I'm not sure.
Okay. I seem to remember in Nyaya we were discussing like Chala and Jalpa and Vitanda, where you just go for the person.
Oh, okay, so then that's okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes, so, you know, it's just one of the techniques used to win an argument. Not a good one, but it's used. This argument has some basis in fact. Unless one is a medical man, he cannot criticize a medical man. Unless one is a lawyer, he cannot criticize a lawyer. Therefore, Keshava Kashmiri first deprecated the Lord's position. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to the champion a student of grammar, how could he dare criticize a great poet like him? But Chaitanya therefore criticized the poet in a different way. He said that although he was certainly not advanced in a literary career, he had heard from others how to criticize such poetry. And as a Shrutidhara, possessing a complete memory, he could understand the process for such a review.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he had said he's heard from others, so that's how he knows.
Yes.
He may not be practiced like the pundit. 1:16:51-52. Taking a humble position, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Because I am not on your level, I have asked you to teach me by explaining the faults and good qualities in your poetry. Certainly I have not studied the art of literary embellishments, but I have heard about it from higher circles, and thus I can review this verse and find in it many faults and many good qualities." Srila Prabhupada. The statement Kariyachi Shravana, "I have heard it," is very important in the sense that hearing is more important than directly studying or perceiving.
Mm-hmm.
If one is expert in hearing and hears from the right source, his knowledge is immediately perfect, right? Because he's heard perfect knowledge, so that what he has, that becomes perfect knowledge. This process is called Shrauta Panta, or the acquisition of knowledge by hearing from authorities, right? So that's why speculation isn't considered very good. Because however you speculate, there's always going to be something better. Like Lord Chaitanya, like we saw before, you go down to the Ghat, you know, for the noon bath, and he'd start up an argument and make a thesis. And with his thesis, he would defeat everybody else. Then he would then take the opposite and defeat his own thesis. Like, you know, using, you know, all the logic and everything like that. So it was properly defeated. Mm-hmm. Then having done that, he would go back and defeat this, you know, the Vishaya on, I mean, the Shamshaya against his. and again establish his first one. So he was just showing all these levels like that. You know, and probably that's the limit of what anybody could handle. Otherwise, he could probably keep going all day doing that. Yeah.
Even in modern academy, the professors follow the same thing. Unless you write the way they said, the way they spoke, you're not going to get a full mark. You may quote any book from anywhere, he finds fault with them.
Yeah. So therefore, you have to. Therefore, you have to pick your sampradaya. Which acharyas you want to hear from? Like that. Yes.
Can we say that hearing is more important than studying? Can we say it's more important because when we hear with the right attitude from the right source, we can get realization?
Yes, yes. See, it's like here, just like we're not reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and hearing from authority.
Yes.
So, in other words, Prabhupada's purports are actually more important for us than the actual verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because we won't necessarily understand those, but by hearing the purports, then we'll understand. So that's why when you get all these things together, then. So that's the difficulty. When you say reading many books, you're just reading the book. There's no commentaries. Mm-hmm. So that's why the books we read, they're written by the acharyas and all that, and so they're commentaries on something. Just like, you know, let's say, I think Madhurya Kadambini is just taking the Shraddha to Prem verse, no?
It's two verses.
Two verses. That one and like that. And so that's what it's commenting on. Mm-hmm. And so that then is giving it's a purport on two verses.
Yes.
You know, like that. Mm-hmm. So like that. You're taking something and there. And that's, let's see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how the acharyas are working. So if we stick to what they're saying, then we're strong. We're in a strong position.
Yes.
This idea, well, you know, you have to be able to work it out yourself. No, that doesn't work. Because who knows where you'll end up if you work it out yourself. This process is called Shrautapanta, or the acquisition of knowledge by hearing from authorities. All Vedic knowledge is based on the principle that one must approach a bona fide spiritual master and hear from him the authoritative statements of the Vedas. It is not necessary for one to be a highly polished literary man to receive knowledge. To receive perfect knowledge from a perfect person, one must be expert in hearing. This is called the descending process of deductive knowledge, or avaroha panta. So that's what we're referring to. Understand. Right? So if you're good at hearing, and then, you know, and then applying that, then you have perfect knowledge. Yeah. The poet said, all right, let me see what good qualities and faults you have found, right? So now it's like, you know, okay, let's see, you know. And then you can't, by the other methods he's not, by just saying yes is perfect, that didn't work. And then he tries to say is, you know, I'm superior to you, that's not really working. And so he says, okay, let's hear what you have to say, you know, because he figures that he won't know and then that way it'll prove. The Lord replied, let me speak and please hear me without becoming angry. Right? My dear sir, because he's already mentioned that, so now he can't become angry. Right? My dear sir, in this verse there are five faults and five literary ornaments. I shall state them one after another. Kindly hear me and then give your judgment. Right? So he's saying, you hear and then you explain. In this verse, the fault of avim rishta vidye yamsha occurs twice. And the faults of Virudha Mati, Bhagna Krama, and Purnar Atta occur one each. Srila Prabhupada gives the following summary of the faults and ornaments. In the verse beginning with Mahatvam Gangaya, there are five literary ornaments and five examples of faulty composition. There are two examples of fault called Avim Rishta Vidhe Yamsha, and one example each of the faults, Viruta, Mati, Purna Ukti, and Bhagna Krama. Vim Rishta means clean, and Vidhe Yamsha means predicate. It is a general rule of composition to establish the subject first and then give its predicate. For example, according to Sanskrit grammar, if one says, this man is learned, his composition is in order. But if one says, learned is this man, this composition is not in order. In other words, what do you call it? Yoda did not understand grammar. Such a flaw is called avimrishta vidyayamsha dosha, or the fault of unclean composition. Right. The subject matter to be known of the verse is the glorification of the Ganges. And therefore the word idam, this, or what is known, should have been placed before instead of after the glorification. The subject matter already known should be placed before the unknown, so that its meaning will not be misconstrued, right? Because you're going from something known to something unknown. If you go from something unknown and try to explain, and then at the end then say, like that, then you won't understand. You always have to go, you're taking the person and what is known, connecting, and then like that, then you're adding on to it. That's how the process works. The second instance of avimrishta vidyayamsha dosha occurs in the words dvitiya shri lakshmir iva. In this composition, the word dvitiya, second, is vidheya, or unknown. Placing the unknown first to make the compound word dvitiya shri lakshmir is another fault. The words dvitiya shri lakshmir iva were intended to compare the Ganges to the goddess of fortune. But because of this fault, the meaning of the compound word was bewildering. Because you don't necessarily know it's about Lakshmi. You're supposed to saying a second Lakshmi. But then you're supposed to say Lakshmi first. Right here. The third fault is that of virudhamati, or contradictory conception. In the words bhavani, bhartu, the word bhavani refers to the wife of Bhava, Lord Shiva. But since bhavani is already known as the wife of Lord Shiva, to add the word bharta, husband, thus forming a compound meaning the husband of the wife of Lord Shiva, is contradictory. For thus it appears as if the wife of Lord Shiva had another husband. The fourth fault is punar ukti, or redundancy, which occurs when the verb vibhavati flourishes, which should have ended the composition, is further qualified by the unnecessary adjective adbhuta guna, endowed with wonderful qualities. Right? Because it's already flourishing means it has wonderful qualities. It means they're developing. Mm-hmm. The fifth fault is bhagna krama, which means broken order. In the first, third, and fourth lines, there is anuprasha, or alliteration, created by the sounds ta, ra, and pa. But in the second line, there is no such anuprasha, and therefore the order is broken. Right? Because you have to, there's a metrical order. And so then he's not using that. He did in the first, the third, and the fourth, but he didn't do in the second. So the second's got to be connected with that first, but he didn't do that. Yeah? Yes. Lord Chaitanya continued. The glorification of the Ganges, Mahatvam, Gangaya, is the principal unknown subject matter in this verse. And the known subject matter is indicated by the word idam, which has been placed after the unknown. Because you have placed the known subject at the end and that which is unknown at the beginning, the composition is faulty and the meaning of the words has become doubtful. Mm-hmm. Quote, without first mentioning what is known, one should not introduce the unknown. Mm-hmm. For that which has no solid basis can never be established anywhere. Footnote 6. This is a verse from the Ekadasi Tattva. In the word Dvitiya Sri Lakshmi, a second, all-opulent goddess of fortune, the quality of being a second Lakshmi is the unknown. In making this compound word, the meaning became secondary, and the originally intended meaning was lost. Right, because you don't know what is the second all-opulent goddess of fortune, because there can be so many other aspects. You know, you have Shri, there can be another form of Shri, or does that mean Bood? Does that mean, you know, like this. Because the word dvitiya, second, is the unknown, in its combination, in this compound word, the intended meaning of equality with Lakshmi is lost. Not only is there the fault of Avim rishta vidhe yamsha. But there's also another fault which I shall point out to you. Kindly hear me with great attention. Mm-hmm. Here is another great fault. You have arranged the word bhavani bhartri to your great satisfaction. But this betrays the fault of contradiction. The word bhavani means wife of Lord Shiva. But when we mention her husband, one might conclude that she has another husband. Right? Because it means bhavani is the wife of Lord Shiva.
Yes.
And so when they say in that about her husband,
yes,
but you've already said her name as the wife of this, then is there another one?
Yes.
Right? You know. Mm-hmm. It is contradictory to hear that Lord Shiva's wife has another husband. Mm-hmm. The use of the words in literature creates the fault called virudha mati krit. If someone says, place this charity in the hand of the husband of the wife of the Brahmin. When we hear these contradictory words, we immediately understand the Brahmin's wife has another husband. The statement by the word vibhavati, flourishes, is complete. Qualifying with the adjective adbhuta guna, a wonderful quality, creates the fault of redundancy. There is extraordinary alliteration in three lines of the verse, but in one line there is no such alliteration. This is the fault of deviation. Although there are five literary ornaments decorating this verse, the entire verse has been spoiled by these five most faulty presentations. It's five literary, but most faulty. Yeah. If there are 10 literary ornaments in a verse, but even one faulty expression, the entire verse is nullified. One's beautiful body may be decorated with jewels, but one spot of white leprosy makes the entire body abominable. As one's body, although well decorated with ornaments, is made unfortunate by even one spot of white leprosy, so an entire poem is made useless by a fault, despite alliteration, similes, and metaphors. Footnote 7. This is a statement of the great sage Bharat Muni, an author on poetic metaphors. So he must be mentioning this in the Natya Shastra. Now here the... Okay, so we'll stop there. Next we'll hear about the five literary embellishments. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.